Welcome to Prevent Connect Audio.
Welcome to a Prevent Connect Audio conference recording. The following was recorded on May 21st at a Call to Men's 2009 Annual National Conference in New York City, New York. To learn more about A Call to Men, visit their website at www.acalltomen.org.
Good morning, folks. Y'all don't mind if I come out here? I can't handle them podiums too well. Well, thank you all for being here. We appreciate it so much. Really excited about men from all over the country doing this work, have chose to join us and be part of this effort. So really want to thank them. I'm excited to share this particular segment with Paul Kibble. Paul Kibble is one of the men that that I spent a lot of time studying early on and learning from. I want to thank Phyllis Frank. She introduced me to Paul, took me out to Oakland to meet him and other men that were doing this work, the Oakland Men's Project, many, many years ago, before a lot of us was even thinking about this. They were already on the march making it happen. And I mentioned Phyllis Frank. I also want to mention her name in conjunction with Gwen Wright and Bea Hansen, three women that are really, really key and central to the foundation and the principles that Call to Men follows and works with in how we do what we do. So I know you've heard their names lift up, but I have a responsibility to lift them up as well. One of our tenets that we try to stay true to it in most occasions is that women will speak first and women will speak last at a Call to Men training, particularly always a national training. Sometimes we're in your community and we kind of like go with your flow, but for us, you know, if we're putting something on, women speak first and women speak last, and that's our way of practicing and modeling in the room, which you'll have the experience with us, practicing and modeling in the room accountability. And you know, we talk to brothers, we talk to men, you know, at the end of these times together, and they're able to acknowledge it didn't hurt, you know. No, it was cool. It was all good. It didn't hurt. You know, they didn't even know they were doing it. You know, women were critiquing us and telling us, do this, don't do it that way. I like this. I don't like it. They didn't even know what was going on. It didn't even hurt. It was all good. So that's what it's about, and it's key and it's central to the work. So my job is to somewhat set the stage for some of the conversations we're going to be having with men as we go forward. So I'm just going to share just a little bit of stuff in regards to setting this stage and what that means. And I've been in many of your communities, and I appreciate you coming out and being with us. But for us, so you may very well have heard some of this, setting the stage is understanding that as we sit here as well-meaning men, good men, righteous men, trying to hold it down, trying to do the right thing, all of those characteristics, qualifications. With all of that being the case, we got a lot of work to do. With all of that being the case, being well-meaning is not enough. And so we really have to begin to take a hard look at where we're at in this process, where we're at on our own individual journey, what's our work, begin to really look at and focus on our relationship with the men defined as the bad guys. We had a call, the men have a tendency to say, quote unquote, bad guys. And the reason we put it in quotes is because we also believe that we as well-meaning men, when it comes to these issues, we have more in common with them than different. But we have isolated them out over here. We have individualized men's violence against women. It works for us as well, meaning men, because as long as we can keep them over here and focus on them, then we don't have to focus on who? Us. And so our job is to look at men as a collective. We speak from the collective socialization of men. And this is so much of what you'll be hearing as we go along over the next 2 days. You've heard me talk about this man box and the socialization of men. One of the first time I heard this box mentioned, it was Paul talking about it up in Rockland County, New York. We don't own it. We don't own nothing. A lot of what you hear us talk about, we learn it from women. We just speak to men in a language that we know men can connect with. We know men. We're men. It's why I come out from behind the podium and get as close as I can get. If I didn't have to be on this stage, I wouldn't. I'd be walking up and down the aisles, real close to men. We know it works for men. But this box, all right, this collective socialization of men, what it's taught us, you know, about not showing feelings, not showing emotions, with the exception of anger, you know, what it's taught us how to shut our sons down, you know, what it's taught us about this whole thing about not being like a woman. This whole, we have such a lack of interest in the experience of women outside of what? Outside of sex. Take sex out of the equation, and we are demonstrated to be so fraudulent when it comes to experience of women when once you take sex out of the equation. And this is not about it's not about talking bad about us or being rude or being mean. Y'all know that's not what we're about. We have to expose ourselves. So you heard Rita giving us some marching orders. We got to expose ourselves so we can get to that work and get to it in the right way, in a righteous way. Don't be like a woman. Don't play like a girl, right? Don't play like a girl. You know, and I work hard. My son Kendall, big guy now, you know, big guy. He messed around by mistake. We have the same pair of sneakers. I didn't tell you this story, Ted. He messed around by mistake and he wore my sneakers to church, right? My wife said, his feet look big, right? And I said, well, they are big because he had just moved up, you know, to 9.5 and these was new sneakers. So I said, well, they are big. She said, well, they look real big. I said, nah, that's, you know, and he proud, man. He moving around. And she messed around and pushed there and was nothing there. And she said, what? You got on your father's day? Oh, he was so proud. He was walking around in his size 13s all day long. And he was bragging, I'm wearing your sneakers. I could fit, you know. That's man box stuff, y'all. You know what I mean? That's man box stuff. It's not all bad. There's some wonderful, 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 lovely things about being a man. But there's some things, brothers, we have to check. We have to check within ourselves. We have to get in tune and get on our own individual journey. You know, I used to be a clinician and used to work and direct an alcohol drug treatment center. And one of the things that we always taught is that you can't take a client no further than you've gone. And in regards to your own personal journey, you need to be at least 5 years ahead of that client. Because at any moment in time, you know, you can backslide a little bit, stuff happen in your life, get funky, get tripped up. And you got to be further enough ahead of that client that you're righteous in your work. Well, we need to get ahead of them. Because I know a lot of the men here have come from all over the country that are doing this work on various levels. And we need to really get ahead of the men that we're choosing to bring along. And so, you know, for me, I'm speaking for myself, try to make myself as transparent as possible, you know, in my own journey, and I'm encouraging you in yours. And speaking of those men, again, my job is to kind of set the stage, so I want to just kind of outline, just thinking about this, Ted asked me to do this here, thinking about how to outline just real quick. I love the fact that we're ahead of time, so it's kind of relaxed, you know, and that's really cool. But there's a quick clip in our DVD. I want you to watch this clip, and then I want to talk with you a little more about it. Ted, can y'all up there put that on for me, please?
As well-meaning men, we must explore and challenge the ways in which we continue to perpetuate the myth that women are the property of their partners and husbands. One of the principal reasons that domestic violence continues to be seen in many of our community as a private issue is our belief that she belongs to him. While we know it's not true, nevertheless, that myth is deeply embedded in our society. We've asked well-meaning men, what would you do if you saw a man hitting his wife? These were the responses.
Generally, at first, nothing. I'd probably mind my own business.
I'd probably mind my own business.
I won't do nothing. I'll say, well, she deserved it. There was a reason why. Otherwise, you wouldn't slap her.
It's not my business. Doing whatever I want to do, do it.
Mind my own business.
Normally, I was just, I guess, attend to my own affairs, meaning I wouldn't butt in, just mind my own business.
You'd mind your own business if it looked like just a slap and things were going to carry on. She might have had it coming.
That's a tough one. I'd probably mind my own business. Even though my gut is telling me that I should do something about this, I've been trained that, you know, mind my own business.
Okay. I would probably definitely mind my own business, only because I guess this type of thing can lead to trouble. I mean, you get involved in something like that and you can get killed, you know? You got people that got really bad temper. I mean, if they smack somebody on the ground and this is their girlfriend or wife or whatever, they can very well pull out something, you know, stab you in the heart or something just for getting involved in something like that. So that's dangerous.
I'd hope I'd do something. I know in the past I've let things like that go by, but I hope today I wouldn't. I would hope that I would at least go and get security or a manager. And if it continued, I would hope I would, you know, get involved in some way.
Okay.
He's, you know, say, yo, chill out or something.
When I happened to pose the same question, but in this case, the woman was so.
Mind my own business. I've been thinking a lot lately about the lack of interest that we as well-meaning men collectively have been socialized to have in the experience of women. Lack of interest. You know, how many men in this room ever took a women's studies course? Raise your hand if you took a women's studies course. In this room, I probably have a decent amount of men. Okay. This brother right here is one of the brothers from Cayman Islands, right? What's your name, brother? Real? How many students was in that class? About 100 students were in the class. Okay, cool. How many men? Huh? He was the only man in the class. Now, it's not like I purposely chose him. Any of the men in the room that raised their hand, you know, the class might have been more of a normal size, about 30 students, but they would have still been 1, 2, 3 men would have been a lot. But here was 100 men in the class, 100 students, I'm assuming you being the only man, and 99 women, right? So when you bring that to your friends to make sense of that, right? How do men then make sense of Real being in a women's studies class? How did it make sense of that? He's there for just a few reasons that would work with men. What would be one of the reasons he's there for? Got plenty to choose from. Then I heard something over there. What would be the reason he's there? Trying to pick up a woman, right? Because that makes sense. That's like a new strategy. That's cool, right? Take a women's studies course. Is you and 100 women. That men can get with that, right? That makes sense. Right? What are the other reasons why he may be there? He must be gay. All right? Because the man box says don't be like a woman, don't be like a gay man. Right? He must be gay. Because heterosexual men will say gay men are women-like. Right? They share the same common interests. So, okay, so then, you know, that's true. While I hope most of you know that's a, I almost said a curse word. That's not true. Anyway, he must be gay, right? So he's either gay, he's either there, there's a new way to meet women, to get with women. Is there any other reason why he might be there? He might be interested in the class. But now, how would that play out when you share that with your friends, that I'm there because I'm interested in the class, I'm interested in the experience of women? What do they say when you say that? They wouldn't understand. They wouldn't understand, and this is our work to help them to understand. Because in the collective socialization of men, women are either less valued, property, or objects. And so this is our work to teach this to men, for men to gain interest in the experience of women. This is our work to go out and do this. We're going to be talking over the next few days about ways to do that, as well as why we need to do that. And I know many of you are already doing this work, but we need to be challenged ourselves, because, and Rita put it out there to us, how many of us are really going out there and working with everyday guys? Or are we just hanging out with each other? You know, are we really stepping far enough out of that box? I mean, like, we're out of the box by being here. But the real test is when we go and talk to men in our community. All right? When we go to talk to men at work, men in other places, when we go to those places and talk to men. Reed was talking about athletes. We work with a lot of athletes. There's a lot of man box stuff going on there. You know, those are wonderful experiences. Joe Ehrman's here. He's going to talk a lot about working with pro athletes in particular. And we've had the experience ourselves of working with a lot of pro athletes. And people get nervous when you say that, you know. Whoa, what would it be like being in a room with a whole football team? Right? They ain't no different than being in a room with us. You know, it's really no different. But it's our work to go out here and talk to men, to challenge this lack of interest. Now, these responses came out of a clip that was speaking of domestic violence, but it's the same exact responses that would come out of a clip if we was talking about sexual violence. Mind your business. Do what you want to do. Go ahead, man. Do whatever you want to do. She belongs to you. That's up to you, man. Now, we as well-meaning men, good men, sit here, and we don't believe in that, but we would have to also challenge ourselves and ask ourselves, how much of this do we actually adhere to? We might not adhere to it in principle, but do we still, on a day-to-day basis, adhere to it in action? Let me say it again. We might not adhere to it in principle. We may know very well that this ain't cool. And we can teach it and speak it. But where are we at in action? She might have had it coming. She might have had it. My wife knows how to push my buttons. How many men in the room ever said that? Oh, she knows how to push my buttons. Oh, she just knows. She knows that look to give me that just drives me. How many men in the room have said that? All right, come on. My wife cusses me out all the time. Never use a cuss word. She just used words that she know I don't understand. Right? Come on. So we don't go there till she might have had it coming. But do we have a relationship in our thinking with she might have had it coming? Are we connected there? Even if we want to say loosely, are we there? I really think it's important for us to be as transparent as possible. I've been trained is the one that gets to me the most. I've been trained. When the brother said, I know I should do something, but I've been trained. All right? Let me hear from you right quick. When he said, I've been trained, I want to talk to a couple of men in the room because this is men's work. When he says, I've been trained, somebody tell me what he meant by that. Or what it means to you, I've been trained, as a man. Excuse me? He's seen it in his house, okay? Yes, sir. I watched it be done before. I've been trained. What does that mean to us as men? He's been taught. Passed down like a legacy. Desensitized. He knows his place. Expectation. This is our work. We got a lot of work to do. I've been trained. We've been trained. I don't think it's any of us, gay, straight, young, old, black, white, rich, poor, urban, rural, none of us really got a pass on this. We've all been trained to various degrees. and we got to we just got to bring. Again, we got to really challenge ourselves, step up, and bring this to our work. Now, I want to share one more thing with you here before, and Paul's going to come up and talk with you some. Well, we'll come back to this here. I might have done this exercise in some of your communities, but maybe not. Women, let me work with the men, please. Don't answer for them. Y'all know. You know. Please don't answer for them. Let me talk to them for a minute. All right? So, this is the scenario. You and your wife, your girlfriend, your partner, you had this great, you had planned this concert, this 3 months out, great concert. You've been planning it. Got a nice night out to dinner. Everything's all set, right? You've been planning it for 3 months. The day comes. The day comes, and your babysitter calls you and says she's sick. She can't babysit. So you then call your number two and your number three babysitter, and they're also not available. What are we going to do? Got this great trip. Those are your children, boy and girl, 6 and 7 years old. Got this great trip. What are we going to do? This great, you know, concert, dinner. What are we going to do? All right, so you then give a call to your neighbor who you trust. Keyword, trust. And you say, do you have a babysitter that you recommend? And she says to you, I have two. One is a boy and one is a girl. And they're both 16 years old. So men, which one do you call? If you're going to call the boy first, raise your hand. Phyllis, only man got his hand up is Dick over here. And who else? What's your name, sir?
Steve.
And Steve, all right. And I know we got to have over 100 men in this room. All right. So you call the girl first, all right? We'll come back to wives and all of that in a second. But you call the girl first, and she says to you, I'm sorry, Mr. Dick, I can't babysit for you because my parents are going to that same show. I'm watching my brother and sister, all right? So men, do you now call the boy? If you would now call the boy, please raise your hand. So we get a few men that will now call the boy, but we have many, many, many men who are not raising their hands. So what would you do then, Brother Mike? What would you do?
Stay home.
Stay home. What would you do, sir? Call my next trusted neighbor, and I'm assuming to see if you can find a girl. All right, so what would you do, Tony?
Stay home.
What are we saying? I'm going to come to the women now. Women, what are we saying? Don't trust men around children. Men are not responsible. What are we saying? Women are socialized to take care of children. What are we saying about ourselves? We don't trust our own sons.
We don't trust the way we raise our
sons. We know how we are. So we're not going to let them go around kids. We don't trust. One more comment. Yes, sir?
Yeah, teen mothers are normalized.
Teen mothers are normalized. Interesting. What it really comes down to, and I appreciate all your responses, we don't trust what we created. We don't trust as men what we created. So, you know, we're seriously being held hostage. you know. We have no interest or limited interest in the experience of women, and we don't trust each other. And we as men, we act like we trust each other. The whole respect thing, I think we're really afraid of each other. More than trust and respect each other. I think we're really afraid of each other. You know. We don't trust each other, and we lack interest in the experience of women. These are some of the aspects of this box that has us locked down. Really locked down. We have to look at ourselves, where we're at on our own journeys. And then we got to bring this word to other brothers and men as well around this country. That collective socialization that teaches less value, property, and objectification. When you got the three of them going on, violence has to be there. That is a formula for men's violence against women. And we have to look at ourselves, where are we at? Because this here is keeping us from talking to other men. We would be pressed, hard pressed, all of us in this room, to leave here today and go, as Rita said, outside this room, whether it's at your hotel, whether it's where you have dinner this evening, wherever. Many of you live here, so back in your community. We would be hard-pressed to go, to leave this place today and go talk to five men that we don't know about what we talked about here today. As men, we would be hard-pressed to go do that. And it just really speaks volumes to the work that we really have to do, because she hit it. She was right on it. That's the work. How many men in this room say that they're extremely comfortable leaving here today and they'll come back tomorrow and say, yeah, I went and I told five men about this work that I didn't know? How many men in the room? I see about 7-8 hands. But there's about, you know, and we appreciate you, and I support you in doing that. But again, there's over 100 men in this room, all right? So that's where our work is really at. And we got to really challenge ourselves about these issues. We don't trust each other. So I can't trust what he's going to say, how he's going to behave, how he's going to treat me, right? And this issue of no interest, limited interest, would be a better, fair way to say it in the experience of women. So this foundation, this is all of us. This is the collective socialization of men. This is not about putting the bad guys over here and the good guys over here. We're all in this together. We're all part of this foundation that teaches us to have less value in women, view women as objects, view women as property. This is the collective socialization of men, all of us. We're all sharing in this foundation. Now, out of that foundation, because of less value, property, and objectification, comes violence. Now, we may not be violent men. I'm going to comfortably assume that we're not, but we're part of the foundation. And then there are various aspects of violence, and we just have a few up here just to demonstrate a pyramid, but there are many, many more. We have to acknowledge that foundation and our role in it. We have to acknowledge that foundation and our role in it. We have to get on our own journey and then bring that to other men. That's so much of what we're going to do here today. What we're going to talk about today is just that very, very that. How we begin to challenge ourselves, our boys, other men, and how we're going to get all, you know, really all, just get on this journey and do this work. We thank you. You come from all over the country, and some of you have come from outside of the United States. And we really, really, really appreciate you being here and in joining with us over the next couple of days.
Thank you for joining Prevent Connect Audio. Prevent Connect Audio is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect Audio are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us at info@preventconnect.org, or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.